This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, 713-572-4610 to get in. XFL season begins tomorrow. We will be out there taking it all in. Come by if you want a tailgate. We're going to be with Enough Said Tailgaters. Just go to the 610 Loophole page, unofficial, official, unofficial, on Facebook. Type in Loophole. You'll get in there. Just come by, join us. It's going to be a fun time for all. At 120, we're going to get into the differences, because it is different. The differences between the XFL and the NFL. We'll lay it out for you.
And should the NFL adopt any of these rules and differences?
We will get into that. But I want to go through some bold predictions from people who cover teams in the NFL. Beat writers are making their predictions. They're calling their shots. Mm-hmm. Bold proclamations involving teams that impact the Houston Texans. Let's start with the Houston Texans. This is Sarah Barshop from ESPN. She says that the Texans will let tackle DJ Reader walk. Here's her reasoning. Houston struck gold when it drafted Reader in the fifth round in 2016, but by not having signed him to a new contract before the 2019 season, the team might be priced out of keeping him. The Texans could use the franchise tag on Reader, but after giving extensions to center Nick Martin and outside linebacker Whitney Mercilus, and with new deals on the horizon for QB Deshaun Watson and Laremy Tunsil, they might not be able to keep the nose tackle.
Agree, disagree, or you have another opinion? I reluctantly agree. It's going to be so bad for the defense, too. Reader was, I'm not going to say great, but man, he was real good in there. He was really good.
Games where he was great. Yeah. I think you got to make this tough decision. You got to let him go. And she mentions the extension to Nick Martin and the extension to Whitney Mercilus. I thought those deals were foolish when they were made. I think they were absolutely foolish when they were made.
You made a really good point on the Mercilus thing. Who else was going to pay him?
Who else is going to pay Nick Martin what he got? Nobody would be the answer. But you know what those guys are. They have three traits that King Bill likes.
What
they
are they?
Tough.
Smart.
They are smart. And they are dependable. And when that happens, I guess you get the extension from King Bill. It sucks. I don't like letting players like DJ Reader walk, but unfortunately, that's a situation that you're in. So I agree with that. This one's interesting. This is from Mike Wells, who covers the Indianapolis Colts. He says the Colts will attempt to move up from the number 13 pick in the NFL draft to select.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for it. Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama.
This is one that I'm torn on as to whether I agree, disagree, or have another opinion. It's tough going against beat writers. You know, it's tough. Beat writers don't write just for the sake of throwing something out there. It's one thing if it's a blogger or if it's a, hey, what about this? You know, kind of a clickbait. You know, what wouldn't it be cool if the Colts moved up and drafted Tua Tagovailoa? But this is a guy that covers the team on the regular, you know. There might be something to this. And it makes sense because they still want to find out more about Jacoby Brissett, right? So they'll give him another year, give Tua another year to recover from whatever, you know, the hip injury, however bad it is. Makes a lot of sense.
The next prediction, this courtesy of Mike DiRocco, who covers the Jacksonville
Jaguars. First of all, what do you think on the Colts?
No, I think they're going to go with a veteran, and I think they're going to draft guys to help around. I think it's going to be a Cam Newton type situation for the Indianapolis Colts,
okay?
Especially if he's healthy. The Jags will get a deal done with defensive end Yannick Ngakoue. This is where it gets really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yannick Ngakoue, one of the best young rush ends in the league. Listen to this background, because I did not know this. I knew Tom Coughlin was a little bit of a hothead, but here you go right here. This is some insight into why Ngakoue did not get his deal last year. The Jags are going to use the franchise tag to try to work something out, but Ngakoue's camp is pretty upset with the team after last year's attempted negotiations. The sides were roughly $3 million apart on annual salary, and former executive VP Tom Coughlin's decision to cut off negotiations resulted in a lot of anger. It's going to take a while for GM Dave Caldwell to repair that relationship and get a deal done, which means it's unlikely Ngakoue will be in training camp, but eventually a deal will get done. So Tom Coughlin just got pissed off and said, screw you, we're done.
Yeah, I could see that happening. But I'm not buying
could
this.
Ya?
You know how you can fix that relationship? Give him that $3 million. This is an easy fix. This is nothing. First of all, Coughlin, you know, whatever. You know, whatever happened, happened. But in this case, it's like, hey, you know how we're going to fix this? We're just going to go ahead and pay you. Okay, I'm in. I think that's going to be easy to do.
The bold predictions from beat writers around the NFL. This is from Teron Davenport, who covers the Tennessee Titans. He says the Titans will sign quarterback Ryan Tannehill and running back Derrick Henry without using the franchise or transition tags. I think this is important because I don't think Derrick Henry would even show up under the franchise tag. I think if you pay Ryan Tannehill $30 million for 1 year, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice.
Right.
I will go ahead and say that this is probably going to happen, although I would be intrigued by the possibility of Tom Brady playing there. But this just seems to make a lot of sense for the Tennessee Titans to just get this done with all their cap space.
I mean, Derrick Henry's going to get what, you know, he's going to get the top dollar, maybe the most. And I think, you know, in terms of Tannehill, he doesn't have the leverage. Like we were talking about earlier with Deshaun Watson, every bit of leverage is in his court. Tannehill's going to be sitting there knowing that they've got other options. They can go elsewhere. There are going to be quarterbacks that they can have. So he's probably not going to get any $30 million guaranteed. I promise you that. It'll probably be a 2-year, 3-year with about that much guaranteed for the duration of the contract. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. He's not going to be one of those $30 million or whatever quarterbacks. So yeah. I could see that. This is, the Kansas City Chiefs prediction, and keep in mind, this doesn't seem like a bold prediction, but I just want to read for you the description, and I think you can kind of localize this back to the Texans. And I think this is something that you should kind of be a little bit concerned about if you are a Texans fan. This sounds like the most on-the-fence BS prediction. Like, if this were a Friday future trip and you would make fun of me, the Chiefs will keep their first-round draft pick.
Because, why go on.
Here is the reasoning.
Yeah.
That might not sound bold, but the Chiefs have traded theirs in each of the past 2 years, and general manager Brett Veach likes to deal.
Yeah.
But with a contract extension for quarterback Patrick Mahomes looming this year, the Chiefs, who own the number 32 pick, need all the good, young, and cheap talent they can.
Yeah.
In order to build their roster.
Yeah, no, I think they might even trade that pick backwards and add another fourth-round pick. I like this strategy. And, you know, you got to pay. First of all, you got to start building around a very, very high-paid, priced Patrick Mahomes right now, right? They might move out of the first round, you know.
Or they could stay.
Get a second and a fifth extra, or something.
You get the extra, though. You get the extra year, though, when you're drafting that first round.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
but,
that's true.
I mean, the fact that the Chiefs need, just hear this out. The Chiefs need as many first-round picks as possible because they're about to pay Patrick Mahomes, and you need young talent, young cheap talent, to put around your franchise quarterback making that kind of money. Exact same situation the Texans are in, except
yeah, they don't have
a first-round pick the next 2 years. They don't have a second. They've traded some thirds. That's interesting, right? That's what we've been trying to say this whole time. We've been trying to make this clear.
Right.
The Texans do not have a lot of assets right now.
Once you pay Deshaun Watson, you're going to have to start surrounding him with a lot of cheap talent. You don't have the picks to surround him with a lot of cheap talent outside of a second-round pick this year and compensatory pick, but you don't have first-round picks to be able to get the most out of it. Yeah, no, that's a great point.
This could be a tough situation for the Texans. In a 4 or 5 year window, three, maybe even 3 years with DeAndre Hopkins, JJ Watt, they're on the back end. It's a tough situation right now.
Yeah,
without the first round picks, unless you just strike gold with the other limited limited assets. Tough, tough situation. But those are the bold predictions from the beat writers, courtesy of ESPN's NFL Nation. The OG John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. It is Sports Radio 610. Bill O'Brien, 6 years in, John. Here is where Bill O'Brien ranks among all of the other coaches that have been with their team for at least 6 years. This is Bill Belichick's first 6 years, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, so on and so forth. This is where Bill O'Brien ranks among the coaches in their first six seasons. He has the worst regular season record, the worst regular season record of any of them. He has the second worst playoff record. He's 2-4. Andy Reid was 2-5.
Mm-hmm.
He's tied for the most division titles with 4. Bill Belichick has 4. He has more than all those guys in regards to division titles. He's the only coach, including Mike Zimmer, who's on this list, who has not appeared in a conference championship game. And he, Andy Reid, and Mike Zimmer are the only coaches who, they're in their first 6 years, did not win a Super Bowl. Andy Reid won it in his seventh.
Mm-hmm.
When I lay that information out for you, and I tell you that Andy Reid won it in his seventh, and he had a worse playoff record than Bill O'Brien, that makes you feel how?
Confused, more than anything. You got eight coaches here. That have been with the same team for at least 6 years. And in those first 6 years, Bill O'Brien has the fewest wins by a wide margin, by the way. The most division titles, but the fewest as in zero conference championship appearances, fewest as in zero Super Bowl appearances, and fewest tied for the fewest playoff wins, just total. It doesn't make any sense. He's got 52 wins. Most of these guys have more than 60. Most of them have 63 or more. And he's still with his squad. It's just confusing.
But he's got more division titles than Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin, titles, John Harbaugh, let's say Andy it all together. Reed, Pete Carroll, and Mike Zimmer.
Division titles are for losers. This illustrates it more than anything. Bill Belichick has three division titles.
Four
division titles, but three Super Bowls.
In his first six seasons.
Sean Payton has fewer division titles than Bill O'Brien and has won a Super Bowl.
In six seasons.
And two conference championships. In his first six seasons, that is. That's correct.
Been to two conference
Mike
championships.
Mike Tomlin has fewer division titles. Been to two Super Bowls. John Harbaugh has fewer division titles. He's been to three conference championship game appearances and the Super Bowl. Andy Reid has fewer division titles. Conference championship appearance in his first 6 years, and as we know, in his seventh year, won the Super Bowl. Pete Carroll, fewer division titles. Two Super Bowls. It's confusing.
The funniest thing about, you know, division titles, when you just generalize them and you simplify them into all being the same, is Bill Belichick hasn't competed with anybody. So I'll give him that. Bill Belichick, the AFC East has been really bad. Sean Payton competed with Ron Rivera mm-hmm. at one point for division titles. And he was competing with the Atlanta Falcons when they were winning division titles. So he had some competition. Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh, they've been going toe-to-toe for a while. So the Ravens and Steelers have been going at it. Andy Reid, he was competing with the Broncos when they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
He competed with the Chargers when they were really good. The Raiders have been bad, so he hadn't been competing with that. Pete Carroll.
Division.
I mean, that division now is as stout as it gets. When he got there, it might not. It was.
But really,
as
for
good.
The majority of his.
Well, Arizona was very good when he was there. So he was competing with that. Mm-hmm. Mike Zimmer. I mean, my goodness, he was competing with Mike McCarthy in the Green Bay Packers. He was competing with the Bears. They've had a nice little run. All those teams. Bill O'Brien, when he won his first two division titles, he was competing with the quarterbacks were. Blake Bortles, Zach Mettenberger / Marcus Mariota,
mm-hmm.
and an injured Andrew Luck for the majority, and a banged up Andrew Luck that ended up having to retire. And the coaches were
Jacoby
Chuck
Brissett.
Pagano. For the last ones. The coaches, though, when he won his first two division titles, Mike Mularkey, mm-hmm. Gus Bradley, and Chuck Pagano.
None of them are even head coaching right now.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
And then in the last two, another team has gone further. So that's the first 6 years. That's the data you're dealing with. And that's just hopefully, just like Andy Reid, if you want to look at the glass half full, Andy Reid hadn't been to a Super Bowl 6 years in, but he won that Super Bowl in year seven. And Andy Reid, 2-5 in the playoffs his first 6 years. Bill O'Brien, 2-4. I won't hold my breath, but there is some data if you want to be optimistic 40 days away from free agency. The OG John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. The XFL begins tomorrow in Houston. We will be down there tailgating. You can come through and join us out there as the Roughnecks begin their season. And speaking of this new football product that is being brought to Houston, what are the differences between the XFL and the NFL, and what should the NFL pick up to add to their rule book? That's next. Still talking about it, Figgy. I'm still talking about it, dude. Still talking about it. I'm moving on.
Don't give up Landry's table, man.
I'm moving on. See? Come on, dude. 713-572-4610 to get in. Roughnecks begin the season tomorrow. It's going to be fun. It's going to be something new. It's always good to have something new. You know how you can always rely on Mexican food, you can rely on Italian food, but sometimes, despite the fact you can consume that food, you sit there and you say, you know what? I could go for something new. So you throw in some Chinese. Sometimes you end up sick over the toilet, but sometimes it's quite enjoyable. That's how I feel going to watch the Roughnecks tomorrow, the XFL. I'm not going to sit here and lie and sugarcoat it. I don't know what this is going to look like. I'm excited to check it out. It could be a real flop, or it could be a nice change up and a way to hold me over for football season, but I don't know what it's going to look like. I think there's potential it could be a bust, it could be a flop. I'll be honest with you, I'm intrigued, but I'm not 100% optimistic.
I'm in.
I'm not approaching it with negative attitude. Look, I'm saying that this has been tried many times, John.
Look, everybody's
tried. A lot of teams
tried.
Have failed.
WFL, USFL, AFL, the second AFL. Indoor football, XFL 1. It's probably going to fail in the long term. I think it has a better chance than most, just because it
it's
has.
Not what you said to Oliver when he was in front of you the other day.
I did not tell Oliver anything. Oliver's my
told
friend.
Told him, look out, Goodell.
That's right. But this sounds fun, and that's why we're doing this. Even if you're kind of at first thinking, oh, great, XFL, and you're rolling your eyes, listen to some of the rules and some of the ways the game is going to be played. So let's talk about what you like and don't like. Pay attention, Figgy. You're going to be there tomorrow. I want to ask you guys what your favorite one or two things about the XFL, its rules, and how it's going to play the games starting tomorrow.
Now, let me say this, though. This is something that I think that they're going to have to do, and I don't know how you do this, but this, as far as making the product enjoyable for guys like myself, You need to make it clear what the rules are. So I don't know if you just
well, I'm
go
doing
over
it.
Them.
We're doing it.
I'm talking about at the stadium.
Oh,
so
they
you know
will.
What's going
they
on.
They will.
To where they're explaining it to you and not acting like everybody understands what the hell is going
I'm
on.
I'm
going to
say these rules, and you guys stop me, both you guys, if you to say you like it, you don't like it, or if you think you like it and the NFL should consider adopting it. All right?
Okay.
Points after a touchdown, okay? In the XFL, there will be no kicked extra points, as in zero, after touchdown. Instead, teams are going to have an option to run a play to score either 1, 2, or 3 extra points, which creates the possibility of a 9-point touchdown if you're if you're down by 8 or 9. A 1-point try is going to be from the 2-yard line. A 2-point try is going to be from the 5-yard line. And a 3-point try is going to be from the 10-yard line, one snap of the ball.
All throughout the game?
The whole game. That's a no from you.
I don't like that.
That's a no from me, too. I think there needs to be at least some uniformity. I do like the fact that that you can come back from a 9-point deficit on with one touchdown, but I think overall I don't like it. All right, here's another rule. The double forward pass.
No.
Hold on.
Don't even tell me no.
They do it in Canada, but here's the rule.
No.
The XFL is going to allow 2 forward passes on a play, provided that the first forward pass is caught behind the line of scrimmage.
No.
So I think – Figgy, what do you think?
Nah, I'm not feeling that either.
I'm not all the way in, but I like the possibilities of option passes now. It can be just a flare to the side and then another pass. It's going to keep DBs honest.
No.
All right.
What are you doing, Oliver?
Hold on. Some of these I really like. Not those two I'm lukewarm on. Not I didn't like the first one at all. All right. What is a catch? All right. We've had that discussion. In the XFL, receivers only need to have 1 foot in bounds, like college, and instead of 2 feet. They also define the catch as secure control of the live ball in flight before it touches the ground, keeps it, maintains control long enough to enable him to perform an act common to the game, but only 1 foot in bounds.
So it's college?
In a catch.
Nah. I like two.
You too, Figgy? That's a no?
Yeah, that's a no.
I like it. I'm in on this one. Okay. I'm in on this one. I think it's going to make for a lot more offense.
It's super creative when they get both feet in. I like that
part. No, D-Hop makes it so much fun that he can do
makes
that.
It look easy.
Yeah. All right, kickoffs.
Oh, no.
All right, so the XFL has designed its kicking rules to increase the amount of returns we're going to see compared to the NFL, which does not want returns. So on a kickoff, the kicker is going to kick the ball from their own 30-yard line. But every blocker is going to be lined up on the opposing team's 35-yard line. In other words, 5 yards away from the kickoff is the kickoff return blockers. I like that. It's going to be like a scrum.
So basically everyone's a gunner?
It's going to be a scrum. No, you're kicking from your own 30, and the dudes that are blocking you are only 5 yards away.
So can they block the kick?
Well, I guess you're going to have to get the kick up high, right?
So can you jump and block the kick?
Only the kicker and receiver can move before the ball is caught. So in other words,
you
kick it, and the guy goes to catch it, and then once he catches it, boom, you go block him. If the kick flies out of bounds or it's short of the opposing 20-yard line, the receiving team gets the ball at the 45.
45?
45.
No.
Yeah, I'm not in on that. So far, we're not in on most of them, but be patient. It gets better.
What are we doing?
All right, it gets better.
Why don't they just do the coin toss where they wrestle for it like Vince McMahon did the first time around?
No. All punts that result in touchbacks are going to be placed on the 35-yard line, not the 25, which is also going to enhance returns. I like that.
That's fine.
Yeah, I like that. There are no coaches' challenges in the XFL, but every play is reviewed in the booth.
That might take a while,
and play,
right?
No, but play can be stopped, but it's
like
gonna,
college,
it'll keep it going a little quicker.
Like college, basically.
Yeah, no challenges, but it'll keep it going.
That's fine.
All right. Now is when we're getting good. All right. I like pretty much everything we're about to hear from.
Okay.
All right. Completely new overtime. Each team's offense in overtime is going to have 5 attempts to complete a 2-point conversion. Okay, from the 5-yard line. So with each successful conversion, you're going to get 2 points.
So it's like a hockey shootout?
It's like soccer, like a penalty shootout. But it's 11 on 11 from the 5. And if you get 5 tries consecutively, you make 3 of them, then the other team goes. If they make 4 out of 5, they win. So it's actual scrimmage plays. It's actual plays from the 5-yard line in overtime. It goes quicker.
I can get down with that.
Yeah, I like this.
I like it too.
That's 10 must-have plays.
Yeah, it's 10 gotta have it.
That's 10 must-have plays.
It's 10 gotta
have it. I can get down with that.
And so there's no coin toss either. The visiting team goes first. They get to choose every time. All right, so penalties in overtime are going to be huge. And then I want to get into timing.
Is it an automatic 2 on a penalty?
Here's the thing. If the offensive team commits a pre-snap penalty in overtime, the ball is moved back and the play reattempted. So, in other words, from the 5,
you go back 5,
you go to the 10 on a pre-snap, and you still got to only have that one chance. If the defense commits a penalty, the ball's moved to the 1-yard line.
Ooh.
So that's pretty cool.
Don't jump off sides.
All right, so here's the best part of the XFL for me.
Okay. I don't know. That overtime's hard to tell.
Overtime is pretty good, but here's the timing. It's going to be a fast game. It's going to be, lots of plays. So just let me read the whole thing. XFL is going to have a running clock, except on all plays, inbounds, outbounds, drop passes, everything, a running clock, except for the last 2 minutes of each half.
Okay.
I'm in on that.
Okay.
But here's where it gets even better. In the final 2 minutes, they're calling it the comeback period. Plays that end out of bounds or with an incompletion are going to stop the clock, just like in the NFL. The clock will be stopped after all other plays that end inbounds until this ball is spotted. So you can run up to the play, run up to this line of scrimmage and run. And then this is what makes it really good for me. The play clock is 25 seconds.
Boy, you know how many delay of games the Texans would have?
25 seconds.
Good Lord. Bill O'Brien would use a timeout in the first series. He'd be out of timeouts.
Well, funny you said that. Each team only gets 2 timeouts a half.
Oh, no.
And the halftime, 10 minutes. It's going to be fun.
Damn,
man.
10-minute halftime?
10-minute halftime.
So it's going to be a lot of up-tempo.
It's going to be 25 seconds between plays. The clock never stops. The guys are going to be gassed. They're going to be up and down. It never stops until the last 2 minutes. And you got a 10-minute halftime and only 2 timeouts.
That's cool.
I love the timing of the XFL.
That's cool.
I like the overtime and I like the timing.
That's cool. Pretty excited.
I'd be down for the NFL doing that.
Man, it's tough though, man. The only thing that stinks, I love that overtime. There's not going to be a lot of overtime though with the points different and stuff. You think June Jones is just going to go?
Well,
for
no,
three
there
every
will
time?
Because of the 7, 8, and 9 point touchdowns you can have.
I think June Jones might go for 3 every time.
Yeah,
I could see it.
I could see it too.
I could definitely see it. It's going to be fun. We'll be out there. Come through if you want to. The Sports Radio 610 loophole page is open. We'll be out there with Nuff Said tailgaters. It'll be interesting. By the way, UFC 247 out there at Toyota Center as well. I guess John Jones is a good fighter. I'm not sure. I think he's pretty good.
You can see John Jones and
Bones?
June Jones.
Bones, yeah.
Bones, okay.
His brother, Chandler Jones, pretty good football player too. You know they're brothers?
I did not know that.
Learn something new every day, Figgy. I'm here for you. 713-572-4610. If you want to get in, what are you sipping on this weekend? What are you drinking? 713-572-4610. Plus, we're going to pass it off to Clint Sterner and Jeremy Branham next. Houston's hated, man. Hated. A lot of times you play that us against the world thing, and it's like, it's a little bit played out. Don't really know what the heck you're talking about, but damn. Rockets were getting clowned yesterday. Astros hated all over the place. By the way, AJ Hinch, in about 4.5 hours, his first interview since the cheating scandal on MLB Network. So set the DVRs. It's going to be worth watching. What I've seen so far, it seems like he's done an all right job, but it's going to be an extended version on MLB Network in about 3.5 hours. So check that out. But, man, a lot of hate going on in the direction of H-Town. I think it's valid when it comes to the Astros. I think with the Rockets, it's more about James Harden and the style in which the Rockets play, but it ain't no imaginary thing to pump yourself up, John. It definitely exists and it's definitely there.
It's justified. It's not what anybody in this town wants to hear in terms of the Astros. What else would you expect the national narrative to be? I mean, you're talking about a team that got caught cheating, planned, it was premeditated, they conspired to cheat, they used electronics to cheat, the people from the highest levels knew about it. What would you expect the national narrative to be? What do people in this town still say about Deflategate and stuff like that? I mean, and that's not even anything close to what the Astros did.
I wouldn't expect anything different in regard to the Astros.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they brought it on themselves. The way that they carried themselves, the Alex Bregman specifically, that brought in hate as is. But when you start wondering, or you put the thought in people's minds that, you know, maybe there was something else extra to that, I understand it. What about James Harden hate? Do you think James Harden hate is valid? And I want you to just be fair, be objective. Do you think the hate that James Harden receives is valid?
No, I think it's biased. I think there's a small part of it is probably racially biased, but it's definitely biased in terms of his demeanor and just he kind of just looks like he's just, I mean, just his body language is never quite, you know, it doesn't fit the prototype of a baller, you know, a hustler, a guy that, you know, gets to the gym early and leaves late, even though he does. It's not justified, but I think it's just his personal style and the way he handles himself makes a lot of people think something that's not there. And to be fair, it has been there some. You know, he has, you know, some of the things he did earlier in his career or even in recent years in the postseason, not being clutch, not finishing on defense, not hustling on defense. I think people have already established those kind of stereotypes for him and that reputation for him, and it's just sticking.
I mean, I think when you're an all-time great, and James Harden is an all-time great regardless of how you feel about him, he's an all-time great talent. When you're pushing 30, you're 30 years old, and you've been as good as Harden has been for a long time, and you don't have that ring at 30, you get hated on. Like, mm-hmm. it's not a unique situation. It happens. It happened to Kevin Garnett. It happened to Dirk Nowitzki. I'm sure Barkley got a little bit of it. But when you don't have that ring and you're pushing 30, you naturally get hated on. You sprinkle right. in the style and the way in which James Harden plays, it's right there. But I just want to make one thing clear, because mm-hmm. I want to defend James Harden here for just a second. I know Kendrick Perkins said that. He joins Clint Sterner and Jeremy Branham, courtesy of Radio.com Insiders, almost weekly. Damn good guest, a Texan, by the way.
Beaumont, shout out to Westbrook.
Saw him get his ass kicked in the state championship by Chris Bosh. I will say that, the 2002 state championship. That was ugly. That was very ugly. They were basically ISO-ing, but I digress. Mm-hmm. But for him to say that this is Westbrook's team, to me, I think is absolutely silly. Westbrook might be the guy who scored 41 yesterday and James Harden just scored 14, but make no mistake, the best player on the Houston Rockets and the best asset the Rockets have is James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what happens. I don't care what you say. I don't care how you try to sugarcoat it. Don't let your hate or distaste for James Harden skew the fact or skew the reality that it is still his team. And if you watched the game yesterday, yes, James Harden only had the 14 points, and yes, Russell Westbrook had the 41, and yes, Russell Westbrook really has been producing at a higher level than James Harden.
Yeah.
But if you're watching the games, it's because teams are double-teaming James Harden. Mm-hmm. They're double-teaming him at half court, and yesterday, essentially, the Lakers were doing that, and Harden was able to swing it to Westbrook, and they're basically 4-on-3 against the Lakers with the ball in Westbrook's hands,
right.
So that's going to happen. But the attention that James Harden gets is what's freeing things up for Russell Westbrook, specifically last night. So unless you're going to watch the Texans play, and when DeAndre Hopkins gets two or three guys over him and a safety over the top and Will Fuller just breaks out, unless you're just going to say that Will Fuller's the better receiver on the Texans,
right?
Sounds stupid,
it
right?
It does, right.
Don't take it to the other sport and start saying the same thing, which is just as foolish, if not more foolish, in regards to James Harden. This is still James Harden's team. Let's
Absolutely,
be honest about
this
it.
This is James Harden's team. He is the, if not one of the premier scorers in the entire league. He can score, you know, at will. He's the most, one of the most creative players there is. But in terms of popularity, it's just not there on a national scale. And I think a lot of it is unfair. And it's kind of based on old reputations or old images of James Harden. All you need to know about what people think nationally of James Harden is Russell Westbrook, one of the most polarizing and disliked players in the NBA, is the most liked player on the Rockets. That's all you need to know about what people think of James Harden.
I love me some Westbrook, though. I'm a fan.
I mean, he goes hard, Westbrook, man. You talk about, like, body
Nobody
language.
Nobody plays harder than that.
You know, like James Harden's body language compared to Russell Westbrook's body language, it's not even close the way it looks.
Yeah, it's not close, and it's. I think it's a good mix with Harden when it's going well. I enjoy it. Last night's game, though, I'm not going to make too much of it. I'm glad the Rockets got the dub, especially given just how much they were getting clowned. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you can sustain what exactly happened last night. The Rockets' recipe for success is pretty cut and dry. I don't think in the playoffs and in June specifically, whenever teams are in best of seven series, it's about adjustments. Like, a lot mm-hmm. of times, the team that makes the most adjustments is going to win. With what the Rockets got right now, there's really not going to be a ton of adjustments. They're just going to have to react to how the other team does things. On the other hand, you saw how the Lakers guarded Harden yesterday. I'm sure if there were a game two tomorrow or something like that, they would adjust that. The mm-hmm. Rockets' style of play is what it is. What you see is what you get. They're just going to have to move the ball effectively. They're going to have to hit their shots, but they're running small. They're going to do what they do. There aren't going to be a lot of adjustments. The key to yesterday's game was the fact that the Rockets, with their style, they dictated the style of this game.
And the pace.
And the pace, everything. And you saw the Lakers, you saw Frank Vogel basically decide to go small with the Rockets. Mm-hmm. He was playing Anthony Davis at the five, not playing JaVale McGee. That's a problem when you start doing things like that. I cited the 2006 Dallas Mavericks who won 66 games, and they were facing the Warriors with Baron Davis, Al Harrington, all those type of guys, Matt Barnes, Monte Ellis, all those guys, and they decided to start Devin George at center in game one, and they never looked back.
Yeah.
The Warriors blew them out of the gym. If you're an opposing coach, it's uncomfortable to go big. It's uncomfortable to play a traditional
lineup.
You'll
lose some possessions.
Against these types of teams, it's uncomfortable. And a lot of times your guy's going to be basically chasing his tail, especially at the top of the key. You're going to see the Rudy Goberts and stuff doing that. But sometimes that's just something you have to live with, because if you try to play small ball with the Houston Rockets with the way they are set up right now, there aren't very many teams in this league that could do that. Maybe the Clippers can. The Clippers could go small if they wanted to and go and try to play some small ball with the Rockets, but there are not many teams where if you're going to try to play the Rockets style where you're going to win. But I just don't know how sustainable that is. And furthermore, P.J. Tucker at age 35.
That's asking a lot.
Asking him to bang with centers on top of the natural conditioning that wears out 35-year-olds at the NBA level. I don't think that's sustainable either.
He's going to be icing his knees an awful lot.
He's not even going to be able to. I told Clint, I was texting Clint during the game, Hot Fudge Sterner, who you'll hear from in 15 minutes. I was telling him he's not even going to be able to shampoo his bald head by the end of the season. P.J. Tucker's not even going to be able to reach up and touch that bald head and put some shampoo on it pretty soon when the season goes on, as it goes on.
I think that it's going to be fun to watch. I think, as I said, before they even made the deal, you know, when they were talking about going small, I think that it's going to put them in a better position going into the postseason, but they cannot win at the level they want to in the postseason. And there's a bunch of reasons for it. You just mentioned P.J. Tucker. Clearly, teams are going to learn.
I love Tuck more than anybody, by the way.
Teams are going to scout on this team and learn a lot more on how to and when to go small against them and when not to. Because I think teams have to go small some against them.
But you can't double Harden anymore.
Especially when they're on a run, when the Rockets are on a run. You go small, you try to get them on the perimeter, you switch everything, and you try to keep them at bay and make tougher shots that way.
But you agree you can't double Harden anymore.
But you can't, and you can't go small.
Especially at half court.
You can't get sucked into always going small. You have to make them play your style some. And I think every NBA coach knows that, but I think that's going to put the Rockets in a bad spot. Sometimes. And then there's this, and I think this is going to be just as important. Let me give you a June headline today.
Okay.
Rockets complain about officiating. And I think it's going to be valid, but I definitely think it's going to happen.
Why?
Because the games are officiated different in the postseason, and they're going to be slamming through screens opposing teams. They're going to be closing on shots like crazy. They're going to be grabbing and pulling. And it happens every year. The Rockets complained about officiating last year and the year before that and the year before that. And it's going to be even worse with a small lineup that they're going to be muscled around a lot. And officials, as they always do in the postseason, are going to let a lot more of that stuff go.
How about one of the deepest teams in the NBA adding a guy who averages 19 points a game and brings some toughness, and also adding Isaiah Thomas, the LA Clippers?
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness.
I mean, they're the team to beat.
I think the other thing about this is, you know, people, I give Tillman Fertitta a hard time, and I talk about the Toyota Diner is alive and well. It's tongue in cheek, because I think it's insulting to tell me that the trades that they've made the last couple of years haven't been motivated by budget and getting below that luxury tax. I think that's somewhat insulting, but in that same breath, I don't necessarily think it's a bad decision. I really don't necessarily think it's a bad decision. And I think if Tillman Fertitta, let me put it this way. If the Rockets had the roster the Clippers have right now, and the Clippers are paying the tax, and they could make a trade and add salary by bringing in Marcus Morris and Isaiah Thomas, I think Tillman Fertitta would make that exact trade that Steve Ballmer did. I 100% think he would do that, but I just don't think Tillman Fertitta looks at this and says, you know what, I'm going to pay an extra $15, $20 million or whatever for a team that probably wasn't going to win a championship with Clint Capela and is, you know, likely not going to win one with Covington. I have no problem with the strategy.
I saw on Twitter that there was an interview that Daryl Morey said he could have spent as much money as he wanted.
That's not true.
It's not true.
It's not true.
Because if he could have, he would have.
It's not true. And it's not an insult to him, but we have the audio of Tillman Fertitta saying that he has to be below the luxury tax X amount of years. Like he's on record saying that. So that's just flat out not true. when he says that. That's I don't believe that for a second. But I don't. Again, I don't knock it.
I don't
knock it. It's just insulting to tell me otherwise.
If Tillman is kind of the voice of reason in that building, you know, when you're honest with yourself, and these teams know. In fact, they know win percentages going into every basketball game they play. Like the Rockets are playing the Suns, right? They know the win percentage for tonight already, all right? So they know the percentages of them winning a particular series. They know the percentages of them winning, getting to the conference championship or winning an NBA championship. And so they know that if you know, so Tillman Fertitta knows what the odds are, what the percentages are. If he's the only smart one or at least voice of reason in that building that says, guys, we're not going to win a championship. There's no reason to ask me to go over the luxury tax.
I got no problem with it. But this was a budget move. Payoff. This wasn't like some sort of like, oh, we got to figure it out. It was a budget move. I don't know. I don't even know that it makes you a better team, but it did put you below that luxury tax. So that's just what that is. That four-team trade puts you below the luxury tax.
Yeah.
Period. That's what happened. So just don't insult it. But good win for the Rockets. We'll see what happens. I think it's going to be tough. But the one thing is, it's going to be pretty enjoyable to watch this small ball stuff and how it goes. Friday Future Tripping here on In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. I'll start it off. The Houston Roughnecks win the first game.
All right. They do it for the loopholes.
They win it. They do it for the H and for the loopholes. We'll be out there, but the Roughnecks will get the W.
The Houston Astros maybe won't change hashtag for the H, but they're going to add another hashtag to their public, to their whatever public relations campaign.
Is this like some inside info?
I just don't think they like the fact that they look so bad again. You know what I mean? It's going to still be for the H.
Fix the hashtag.
I just tweeted about the Roughnecks, and I used, in part because it was fun, I used hashtag for the H.
Okay, there you go. John Jones wins in the first round tomorrow at UFC 247 at the Toyota Center. First round knockout for John Jones. And by the way, a historic moment, my first UFC prediction in the history of Friday Future Tripping.
How about that? How about the autographs yesterday for, who was it, Alex? Alexander the Great?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You got anything else for me?
I got nothing for you, man.
Nothing. Yeah, you're definitely tripping on a Friday Future.
I am.
Trip. We'll be at the Roughnecks. One more prediction here. Pavetex Rob gets kicked out of the stadium tomorrow.
Dank.
Is he going?
I think so.
Oh, God.
The odds are heavier that Dank gets kicked out more than Pavetex.
The problem with Dank, shout out to Think Tank Dank and the hard work he does. The problem with Dank is that he comes there, and he's so effing tired because of how hard he works in the graveyard shifts that you sprinkle in like the sun, you sprinkle in the alcohol, and you sprinkle in the stuff, and Think Tank Dank is just basically a zombie.
He's a fun dude, man.
Shout out to all the loopholes. We will be out there tomorrow at the opening. Nuff said tailgaters will be there as well. If you want to join, just hit us up on Twitter. Go to the Loophole 610 Facebook page. If you want some more specifics. It's been a fun week. Thanks to John McClain for joining us this week. Thanks to our guy Stanford Rout. James E. Hedebo also joined the show. It's been John. Yeah, give me a plug. Go ahead. John McClain will join us next Tuesday. Hopefully it won't be as dramatic as he was when he talked about his seat being open at the Super Bowl. Goodness, that was crazy. For Figgy Fig being the best in the world at what he do. For the OG John Lopez, I am Landry Locker. This has been In the Loop, episode 431. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, live from the TriStar Show, next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.